The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Right now, though, I want to talk about epilepsy. So between maybe 45 and 50,000 people in Ireland suffer from epilepsy. It makes it one of the more common neurological conditions in the country. Despite that, despite the multiple ways in which it manifests, it is often misunderstood. There's still stigma around it. And all of that means that actually a lot of people with epilepsy will go through a period of delayed diagnosis as well, which is what my two guests in studio know all about. They're going to be sharing their own experiences and family experiences of these conditions with me. So John Verling is here. John is the father of Freddie, who has Dravet syndrome, and Mia Sherwood Scully, who has temporal lobe epilepsy. So John and Mia, thank you both very, very much for coming in. John, if I can start with you, can I first of all ask just about Freddie and when he was first diagnosed, what age was he?
Freddie was 19 when he was diagnosed.
And when now, in hindsight, do you recognise the symptoms having started?
The symptoms, 9 months. He's a classic Dravet syndrome candidate. At 9 months, he had his first seizure.
And what did that look like?
Oh, frightening. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, middle of November. My wife suddenly jumped up saying something's wrong with Freddie, and she pulled him out of the little cradle we had beside the bed, and he was just shaking. Shaking and making this most horrible noise, because when you seize, your body contracts or squeezes all the air out of your lungs. So he was, it was real frightening. So we'd never seen a seizure or knew what epilepsy was or anything. So we lived at the time, we lived in the countryside, so we lived far away from anywhere. So it took a bit of time for the doctor to arrive, and off he went in an ambulance.
And as you said, I can only imagine, thankfully,
yeah, nobody can, really,
how terrifying that must be.
Yeah.
When ultimately he got to hospital and he's treated, what happens next in terms of the explanation?
Go home.
That's it.
When a child, especially a child under two, has a seizure, it's put down as a febrile seizure. So to do with your temperature. Basically, you have an infection, your brain can't cope with infection as a child. The heat, there's a sudden rise in temperature. So it's put down as a febrile convulsion. And Fred kept having febrile convulsions. And so he was put on anti-epilepsy medicine. And because of the nature of Dravet syndrome particularly, nothing popped up on scans, MRIs, CAT scans, PET scans. So at one stage, he was a candidate for surgery when he was about 10 or 11 years old. He was a candidate for surgery because they thought the surgery might, or the epilepsy might be temporal lobe. So they may remove part of his brain. Thankfully, that never happened.
Yeah.
So it was only when Fred was 16 we transferred from paediatric services to the adult services that his new neurologist recognised in Freddie that he may be a candidate for a genetic epilepsy because he has freckles on the back of his hand. And he also looked back over his notes, saw the classic signs of early seizures, the epilepsy wasn't responding to medication.
Yeah.
So he was classic. He had intellectual disability, he had a problem with his gait, he had anything you can imagine.
And all that was epilepsy related?
It was Dravet syndrome, yeah.
And but say by the time when you describe, say he's 10 years old, what impact had it had by then on his development?
By the time Fred was 10 years old, he should have been in fifth class in school with, you know, being able to read, write, mixed with friends. He couldn't do any of that, really. He was very sociable. He was great fun.
Yeah.
Still is great fun. But he couldn't. He'd run in the playground in school. He'd keel over with a seizure.
How many times a day was he having a seizure?
Thankfully, in one way, he was only having a seizure once a day, maybe once a week. But if Fred had one seizure, he'd have a second one. So he may have one in the afternoon. Then that night, as he fell asleep, he'd have another one. He had nights. Freddie had nights when he had 19, 20 seizures in a night.
God.
A full-on tonic seizures, you know. And the hospital didn't, because he wasn't responding to medication, the hospital didn't know what to do with him. So quite often he would end up in ICU.
Because I was going to ask you, I mean, how often are you just dealing with that at home, or how often do you go to hospital?
Thankfully, at the time we used to live in Dingle.
Yeah.
We had to move from Dingle to Tralee because, as the neurologist said, this is too dangerous for you to be so far away from home. Because too many times in the back of an ambulance, speeding in the road at any time of the day or night. He'd no life any for us. For him or for us. So he, once we got used to it, and then we moved to Tralee when Fred was about 8 years old, things settled down slightly because he's put on a whole cocktail of medications. But all the medications really were doing were, I suppose, putting him to sleep almost. You know, he was in a constant daze.
Mm.
And when one medication didn't work, they'd try a second medication, and then he'd be on a third and a fourth, and then they'd be scared to take him off the first one because the fourth one's working. You don't know which one's working by the end of the time. So when he was finally diagnosed, it turned out he was on completely the wrong medications. The one medication he shouldn't be on was something called Tegretol, and that just sends Dravet syndrome kids bananas, you know. So he came off that, and he's been on quite a good medication ever since. Well, but he's been stable the last 3 years.
Was there a consequence to being on the wrong medication? I mean, there must be on some level, but I mean, did it? You obviously weren't treating the Dravet syndrome, yeah. But were you also was it being exacerbated by being on the wrong medication?
Quite possibly was. Yeah. Without going too technical, but Fred has a problem with the neurons misfiring in his brain.
Mm.
So it's the sodium inhibitors weren't firing correctly. And the one thing that the Tegretol drug he was on is it inhibits the works of your neurons.
Okay.
Sodium neurons. So nothing was working, basically. But the drug was so strong, it was sedating him. So he was permanently sedated.
Yeah. How is he today? How old is he today?
Fred is 22. He was 22 in January.
And how is he?
He's a great young fella. He's a great lad. But yeah. He's, again, it's coming back to medication again. The medication he's on now, it's fading. You go through these honeymoon periods where a drug might work. So we had to work with the government and the HSC to get this new drug called fenfluramine, which was an it was a weight loss drug used in the 50s and 60s. And they repurposed it and found it worked for people with epilepsy, specifically with Dravet syndrome. So that was approved for use in the country in January of this year.
Mm.
And it became available on the HSC reimbursement scheme this month.
Yeah.
So Freddie's going to go on it next week.
And, you know, pardon these questions in advance,
no, it's
but
okay.
what quality of life does he have?
A poor quality of life at the moment, really. Because he's 22, you see, once you leave the education system, you're then reliant on the care system.
Yeah.
And the care system in Ireland is very, very underfunded, very under everything. You know, they can't get enough people to work it. And if you find a good carer, that carer will leave because they'll get a better job somewhere else. So he goes out 4 days a week with his carer.
Yeah.
Goes around town, goes to the swimming pool, meets other friends who are similar situation to him.
Yeah.
And otherwise he sits and watches TV.
And how conscious are ye of your ability as ye get older to keep caring for Freddie?
It's very difficult for myself and my wife. Lisa, if Lisa's here today, she probably couldn't even talk. She'd be so upset. Even though we've been living with this for 22 years, it's still such an emotive subject for us.
Yeah.
But yes, we're very, very worried as we get older because Fred will always need constant care. He has an older sister, Ruby, who's excellent. She's wonderful. She's off in Australia having a great time. But we couldn't expect Ruby to take over the care of Freddie. You know, Freddie will have to be. As we get older, I'm 59, Lisa's a bit older than me. And once we get 70, 80 years old, it's very hard to look after someone constantly.
Yeah.
It's draining at the moment even.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, the point at which you have kids is kind of a defining moment anyway in your life. But
yeah.
it is completely taken over, I'd say, your life. Has it for 22 years?
I'd say Freddie was 9 months when he had his first seizure.
Yeah.
Ruby was 4 at that stage. We were having a great life with Ruby and suddenly everything was stopped really, you know.
Yeah.
Like Freddie could never play football, he could never cycle a bike, could never go to the beach, could never go off with friends.
Imagine your child will do.
You imagine your child, you've done yourself and you see your own child going off playing football. You know, we were living in Kerry, everybody plays football in Kerry, so that would be it. But no, he's, you know, he wanted it.
Yeah.
He part to drive, he's zero coordination, so he couldn't do it anyhow, but he wanted to.
Yeah.
You know?
And with Ruby as well, I'm sure, like it's great to see her kind of flourishing and going off and doing her own
wonderful
thing.
Yeah.
And then when you see it, though, on some level, there's probably a bit of you that thinks it just reminds you when you see how much she's enjoying life, how life-limiting
is
things
for
are
Freddie,
for Freddie.
Yeah. Even like
know.
Fred was in national school for a while, in an ordinary national school, and those kids are now there. And one of his friends is travelling around the world on an oil tanker. You know, they're off doing their own things, living their own lives, you know. And he can't really, you know. Not that
it's
knows,
the gap widens as they get older, doesn't it?
An awful lot.
At the start, they can kind of mix. You see that with kids with other additional needs as well.
Yeah.
And then as they get older, just they're left behind.
Very much left behind, yeah. Even when, like, we were told when Freddie was in fifth class that we need to find a special school for him, that was a real shock for us. Thinking, no, Freddie'll be fine. He'll go off to secondary school and he mightn't be as advanced as the other kids, but he'll get there. But there was no way he could have done, you know?
Yeah.
And luckily we found him.
Was there an element of, like, in hindsight, kind of naivety in your part that you were kind of blinkered to what other people saw?
If you had one child already, but having a second child, your first child has gone through everything. It's flying around, you know? And then your second child isn't. So it's real.
Yeah.
Like, especially Lisa, for the first 5 years of Freddie being in school, she sat outside school in the car until Freddie came out. She'd drop him off school in the morning and sit in the car and wait for him to come out at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. She was so worried that something would happen to him within the school, you know?
Oh, that was just her, of her own volition.
Her own volition, she sat in the car, yeah.
Couldn't bring herself to go home.
Then we moved to Tralee, we found a new school for him, and she camped outside the second school as well. And I was working, but I'd relieve her whenever I could, but yeah.
So, like, I mean, life-limiting, you know, it's a phrase we use when we describe the person at the centre. Yeah. It's life-limiting for you guys, particularly life-limiting for your wife.
For parents, oh yeah, for Lisa was very hard,
yeah. I had mentioned as well that we were joined by Mia Sherwood Scully, who has temporal lobe epilepsy. And Mia, compared to Freddie, I'm not sure is this the politic way of saying it, but you're on the other side of the spectrum, is how I'd put it, in terms of the impact on your life. But there's impact nonetheless. So maybe tell us, you know what, how you got diagnosed, what happened?
So I was diagnosed just after I turned 23. I got my diagnosis officially in about October 2023. I hadn't really thought much was wrong, and I remember one day I was finishing up that year. I was in the last kind of final 2 weeks of final year of my bachelor's degree, and I'd been working with my dad that morning in town, and I was like, I'll go out, have a nice afternoon by myself, get some coffee. So I was sitting by myself on Drury Street outside, it was Blazing Salads, it's now Manny. And I was sitting there, and I, since childhood, have had what I always called dizzy spells. I find them impossible to try describe. And I had actually gone to the doctor when I was about 18, and I asked about them, and they said, you're a woman, you're vegetarian, it's just iron deficiency. So I was sitting.
Eat some meat and,
and
go away.
And get on with it, like cop on a bit, maybe. So I was sitting having my coffee. I started to have one of these dizzy spells, which tend to just maybe make me feel a bit nauseous, spaced out. My temperature might go up a bit. Didn't think anything of it. I've always had them. And then slowly it just started to progress. And I kind of noticed just wasn't getting any better. About 2 minutes in, it's still not fading. And I was like, okay, not great. And then just the whole left side of my body just started to go entirely numb. And that was kind of the moment I was like, okay, I'm in trouble. And I do remember vaguely thinking, do I need to turn to the person beside me? But when you don't know what's happening, you're kind of just, don't know, you're not sure where to go with it. But I think, I don't know if I did try to talk to someone, but I don't think I would have been able to. And that's pretty much all I remember. I woke up on the floor then, like 10 minutes later. I had quite a long seizure. It was about almost 5 minutes of convulsions. I was lucky actually two off-duty paramedics were walking past as I hit the floor pretty much. So they stood in and helped. And a really kind man actually, who also is epileptic, was in Blazing Salads. He came out and he helped as well. But yeah, I got then admitted to hospital for about 6 days. They did want to keep me in for monitoring, but some of it was also waiting for like an MRI to get some answers.
And how quickly then after that, like, as in, was it during that 6 day spell that somebody said to you, this is epilepsy?
So that was kind of, they didn't say it was like a definitive diagnosis, but they were like, it is likely. It was on my last day, some neurologists came in. They had looked at my MRI and there's loads of scarring all over my brain. I have hippocampal sclerosis, I think it's called, which is just scarring. So each time I would have a focal aware seizure, is what they're called, my brain would scar a little bit. And so they say all signs kind of point towards epilepsy, but they still had to rule out. I had like a telemetry connected to measure my heart, and I had to get a few scans done. They're quite, for me at least, there's not a definitive test that could be done to kind of go, yeah, you're epileptic. So it was more so ruling out everything else and then being like, this is kind of, evidence shows it is epilepsy.
And was there was there any element of, I know this is a strange question, of relief when they told you what it was or what it probably was, that, you know, because when you'd say there's a whole left-hand side of my body starts going, no, I'm head thinking, oh my God, are you having a stroke or something like
exactly
that?
Exactly my thoughts, yeah.
You know, was there an element of relief knowing it?
Definitely, but I think diagnoses are strange things in that it's weird because I hadn't known about it before. So it's not like I'd spent years looking for answers and was like, finally, I know what this is. There is the element of now I can try to take care of it. I am medicated now. I have to watch my sleep, my caffeine intake, which I'm not very successful at. But there is also the element of like this is with me for the rest of my life now at the same time. So it's a weird, it was slightly a relief to know that I could help myself. And now I have far less focal aware seizures. It's same as in Freddie's case, my seizures tend to cluster before I was medicated. I might go a week or two without any, but if I have one, I might have five.
And what are they like now? Because you described maybe the dizzy spells when you were younger, and then that was obviously more severe. So,
what
do they resemble?
I've only had the one tonic-clonic seizure, the collapsing and convulsing, and I do still have the focal aware seizures. On occasion, they're down to maybe once a month, but I can go kind of 2 or 3 months without having them, which is a lot better. And especially now being coming closer now to 2 years of having a diagnosis, I've learned to kind of trust myself again, because although it took 22 years for me to collapse, any time I had a focal aware seizure, especially before I knew what medication would work for me, you do straight away go to that fear of I'm going to collapse again.
Yeah.
So something, it did kind of knock my confidence for a while. I think now I've started to gain my confidence back. I had said I collapsed at the end of my final year in bachelor's and I'd wanted to go into a master's. So I had to take a year out, not really by my own choice, but to get my health sorted. And starting that master's, I always describe, well, I haven't described it to anyone, but in my own head, I've always kind of felt like starting a master's is obviously something requires a lot of thought, a lot of studying. And it felt like I was relying on a brain that I couldn't trust anymore. But kind of during the year, got my grades back, didn't fail anything. Like I've kind of learned, I've started to learn to live with it.
And, you know, it's so rare in the world we live, to find yourself in a situation where you're totally alone, there's no one around. Mm-hmm. And you know, like whether you're, and I'm sometimes conscious of, maybe it's just having come back from holidays, if you're out swimming in the sea and you decide, you know what, I'm actually going to swim a good bit out here and go for it. Now, obviously don't do that if you're not a decent swimmer. But you know when you go, but that's what I was about to ask, even walking through the woods or something, you know, like, again, it's something I can take for granted. I can go, I could go for a walk up the Wicklow Mountains and, well, worst case scenario, I might twist my ankle or something like this and I can ring somebody. But I'm sure there maybe is still a question in your head, or there would have been a period after that seizure where you would have thought, I shouldn't be somewhere for a long period of time on my own. Or did that come into your mind?
Oh, definitely, especially immediately after hospital. I went and I saw Harry Styles at Slane, which was about a month after hospital. And I was like, I'm not sure if I should be doing this. I think it was a great day. I have very little memory of it now. But I actually had my friend who was with me is medically trained. So like I knew I was in safe hands if it came to it. But that was definitely a concern for me for a while, especially I started a new job a month or two after hospital. And I'd kind of just asked them, I was like, are you guys, do you know how to kind of treat a seizure if it happens? And like none of them had an idea. Actually, the first answer I got was put a spoon in your mouth to stop you from swallowing your tongue. Yeah. And I was like, please don't do that.
Yeah.
So that it definitely came to mind. But I think now I'm a lot more kind of at peace and I trust myself enough that I hopefully won't collapse again.
Yeah.
Or if I do, because I have to have sedative in my bag, like buccal midazolam it's called. And I'm like, will anyone know how to use it? Possibly not, but it's not too much of a concern for me, at least, anymore.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you said it yourself, it's something you're going to have to learn to live with for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it, like, you know, Freddie's experience, and it's the experience, I guess, with lots of other conditions, is a drug is great for a while and then the efficacy starts to fade away. The body just gets used to it to a degree. Might that be the same situation in terms of the medication you'd be on with frontal lobe epilepsy?
Possibly. I did start on Keppra, which tends to be one of my, at least I think, one of the most common drugs people start on with epilepsy. Yeah. And it just, it wasn't working great for me. I am not a person who has a temper, but oh my God, the rage I felt sometimes on that.
Kepler like, rage is called.
Oh yeah. My God, the Kepler rage. My blood would boil at the smallest things. And also I was just a bit like somnambulant at times. Like I just felt like I'd constantly woken up from a nap and didn't know where I was. And I was having less, but still kind of frequent enough seizures.
Okay.
So they've put me on Briviact, which is, I think, kind of like the Keppra 2.0. It's the improved version. And for now, at least, I've been on that about a year and a half, and it's working so far. I occasionally will have a breakthrough seizure, but usually like once a month. So it's a lot less. So still for the moment, it's working for me.
How has it changed your outlook or your just approach to life, if at all?
Mm-hmm. I think I am a more relaxed person. I didn't think that would be the case, but I think a lot of the reason I collapsed was coming to the end of final year. I suddenly thought, what am I doing with my life? Especially, I think, with COVID, doing most of my bachelor's degree with COVID, life was so small and so enclosed. I got to the end of final year and like it was like the world split open and it's like you can go in all these different directions. And I'm an indecisive person, so that stressed me out. Whereas now I think if something doesn't go my way, I'm like, you know what? I've had bigger problems to deal with. And I think it did just teach me a lesson in just making sure I'm taking care of myself. But that also, it'll work out.
John, Mia mentioned there, said the spoon in the mouth thing. Mm. How often do you run into the cliches when it comes to epilepsy?
Not as much anymore because okay. He's older. But initially, yeah, I remember an ambulance driver told me to make sure you always have a wooden spoon, a small wooden spoon in your pocket, just in case. You will not swallow your tongue in a seizure. You know, you couldn't swallow your tongue anyhow. I don't think you can, but you would. Yeah, you know, you'd almost get the possession thing. You know, it's amazing what people will believe.
Yeah,
because epilepsy is frightening to experience.
Yeah,
like Freddie must have had close on 1,000 seizures. I still get frightened each time he has one. You don't know what he's going to come out of it.
Yeah,
and you know he will come out of it, but and then the poor fellow is sitting on the couch saying, "What happened to me?" You know, because he would have been watching TV or on the way upstairs, so he'd go upstairs recently and he just fell straight flat back and banged his head. And, you know, so even the going upstairs has to be monitored. So, you know, Lisa follows him upstairs. She follows him to the bathroom because you have to, you know. So, and then you cannot explain that to other people. You can't say, people, you know, this is only something that happens once a month or it could happen when he's in bed. It could happen anywhere.
It's exhausting, John.
It's exhausting. It is exhausting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like epilepsy has a mind of its own, I always think. You always think that I have it under control, but no, it's sort of sneaking around the corner.
Yeah.
So no, you haven't got away with it, you know.
Pops out when you least expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And because I'm involved with Dravet Syndrome Ireland, which is the charity foundation, you meet people from all walks of life with all different stages. Like one woman joined recently, her son is 38, and he was only diagnosed when he was 36, I think it was. So she had 36 years of not knowing what the hell is going on here, you know. At least some way we were lucky Fred was diagnosed at 19, you know. But the thing is, Dravet syndrome was developed or characterised in 1996. So there's no reason why people shouldn't be more aware within the medical organisations of things like Dravet syndrome. We're not just saying, you have epilepsy, and that's it, here's Keppra, come back, it doesn't work, you know.
Yeah.
Remember we were in Freddie's paediatric neurologist office and I said, how many medicines are we going to try before we get this under control? And she pointed to a poster on the wall and she must have had about 30 medicines on. And she said, we'll keep going till we find one that works. At that stage, I begin to get worried, like, who knows what's happening here, you know?
Yeah.
So, and he went through a fair whack of those medicines, you know, and none of them worked, really, you know, so.
Listen, I really appreciate you, John, coming in and sharing the story. And Mia, thank you so much.
Happy
as well.
To be here.
Yeah, no, really, really appreciate it. John Verning and Mia Sherwood Scully, thank you both.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.